My guest is Norman Solomon. Norman Solomon is the author of the weekly column Media Beat, which has been in national syndication since 1992. He is the founder and director of the Institute for Public Accuracy and the author of a number of books, the most recent being War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. Now, Norman, I wanted to talk to you about the recent controversies surrounding the New York Times coverage of the lead-up to the war in Iraq, because the investigation into this, I think, is giving us a really clear understanding of how information is being managed and how a country was marched off into war. If we could start at the beginning to kind of frame this discussion in the events since 2003. So what started this investigation?
Well, there's the official investigation, which kind of pulls on the thread, and pretty soon the whole garment is unraveling in front of our eyes. The focus of the official investigation, the special counsel, as he's called in the United States, under the federal government, has to do with the intentional leak of the name of a CIA agent to blow her undercover position in retaliation for her husband going public with exposing some facets of the lies that the Bush administration used to drag the country into war, specifically the claim made by the Bush administration, including President Bush in his State of the Union address, that the Iraqi regime under Saddam Hussein had tried to buy enriched uranium from Niger, the African country. And it's really, really a relatively small part of the whole mosaic of concocting pictures in the news media that present the idea it's necessary to go to war. And so we really, when we look at the situation, find that the U.S. news media, on the whole, were almost inseparable from the war makers and war planners in Washington, the New York Times being an example, but really many different media outlets in the United States, including those with wonderful reputations, were really part of the preparation operation to go to war and building, you might say, a propaganda onslaught to make it feasible to bring the country into war.
What is Joseph Wilson's role in all this?
Well, he is the wife of the unmasked CIA agent Valerie Plame, and Joe Wilson's a former U.S. diplomat. He was sent at the request of the CIA to investigate whether there was anything to this notion of there being a sale of enriched uranium to the Iraqi government, or any attempt by the Iraqi government to make such a purchase. And he came back and reported that no, there was no such indication of any sort of effort by the Iraqi regime. But of course, the Bush administration portrayed the situation as quite opposite, and I think that's very revealing. It's part and parcel of the fact that when the President of the United States decides that he wants to bring the country into war, a lot of leverage is utilized both within the government and through the news media to bring that about.
Now we hear that Judith Miller was also under subpoena and went to jail to protect her source, or briefly at least. What's the significance of Judith Miller in all of this?
Well, at one level, she was, as you say, refusing to give the name of a source, which is generally a good thing for a journalist to do, to maintain confidentiality of sources. But in context, she is somebody who served as a pass-through conduit for disinformation from the Bush administration. She utilized the unnamed source of Ahmed Jalabi, who was a hand-picked Iraqi exile, beloved by the Pentagon, somebody who had not been in Iraq in decades, but who was determined to bring the country into war and had a vested interest in sending out the myth, as it turned out, that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, which we found subsequently there were not. So it has to do with separation of press and state, and whether, in this case, Judith Miller, who had enormous capability to put stories on the front page of the New York Times, whether the Times was an outlet that functioned with real independence, or whether it was basically serving as a PR sheet for the Pentagon and the White House, particularly in its news section, and by and large it was.
Now, just to talk about this, you mentioned the New York Times acting as a PR sheet for the White House. You know, Arianna Huffington of the Huffington Post pointed out that on September 8th, 2003, when Judith Miller came out with her article citing the aluminum tubes as evidence for weapons of mass destruction, that on that same day, Dick Cheney comes out at a press conference and actually, you know, cites the New York Times article and, you know, of citing the aluminum tubes. So now we see that, you know, now we know that Judith Miller's source in that for that particular article was Louis Libby, assistant to Dick Cheney. Now, how often does this happen, in your opinion? I mean, is this something that happens regularly, that the Bush administration, you know, leans on the press for some kind of credibility after they plant a story? Is this how information is being distributed?
This is very common, where officials in the State Department, the White House, the Pentagon, will plant stories in the news media and then, as though they had nothing to do with it, go on TV and radio, hold news conferences saying, gee, don't just take our word for it. Look at what the New York Times just reported. Look at what the Washington Post just reported. It's not as though these major media outlets are being used, per se. They want to be utilized. They're part of the process. They're eagerly seeing themselves and proceeding as part of the national security state. And that's where, while we have the old phrase first mentioned by President Dwight Eisenhower 50 years ago about a military-industrial complex, we could now refer very accurately to a military-industrial media complex.
Right. Now, I think it was a couple days ago, we talked about Joseph Wilson. You know, he comes out and he's calling for the resignation of Karl Rove in his role in all this. Now, can you put that into perspective for us? What does that mean that Joseph Wilson would come out and say that?
Well, I think that he's feeling aggrieved. His wife was outed as a CIA agent. And certainly it's a travesty that Karl Rove still is able to work in the White House. But on the other hand, you know, it's not really about individuals. And I think it would be a mistake if anybody assumed that the problem could be solved by getting a few people to resign or be fired from the White House or the executive branch as a whole. It really goes much deeper than that. And the mentality that Karl Rove exemplifies would remain in the White House as long as you have this administration.
This administration has been characterized as being one of the most secretive administrations in recent history for people who have been paying attention. In your experience, you know, working the media beat, how true is that?
Well, I think that's true. I think they've been very effective also of blunting the media efforts such as they are to gain more access to information that the public has a right to. And certainly the inclination was there for the George W. Bush administration. And after 9/11, the administration had a lot more leverage. The Congress was even more cowed than ever, likewise the news media. And this is an essential problem with a society with significant democratic elements such as in the United States, where it's not enough to have these rights such as the First Amendment on paper or on parchment. What's essential is that it be utilized continually, and if the right to free speech, to freedom of the press, is not effectively utilized, it will atrophy, which is to a significant extent what has happened in the USA.
You talk about freedom of speech. Judith Miller is supposed to be the proponent of free speech, the martyr for free speech, and in the media here nationally and the media even internationally, even for instance in some of the UK media that I've been reading, she's kind of held up as, you know, another free speech martyr. Now, is this a case of the press, you know, coming in to protect one of their own, or what's going on here? What connections aren't being made?
Well, I think in a narrow sense, she did take a good position. She didn't want to reveal who her source was, but in a broader context, she was engaged in flacking for and serving the administration as it spread its disinformation. And I think a tip-off was found when, after she was released from jail, She wrote an article that appeared in the New York Times, and she stated that she had agreed in an interview with Louis Libby, the top assistant, the chief of staff to Vice President Cheney, to describe him as a former Capitol Hill official, a former Hill aide, as they say. And that is kind of like saying, well, President Bush, rather than mentioning him as a source, saying, well, he's a former high school student, as one pundit aptly pointed out. It was very misleading, and yet, by your own account, Judith Miller agreed to that. So it showed that she was part of this process where, in this case, the source of the information was somebody who wanted to hide what his own vested interests were and who he was working for. So to get himself described as a Hill aide would be to throw off any real understanding of what his agenda was, where he was coming from, what his motivations were. And that really tells us that Judith Miller, and therefore the New York Times, which was so willing to have her write these articles and for them to be splashed on the front page, the New York Times, as a supposed great media institution, was really part of the war propaganda apparatus.
Now, one thing I just can't get my head around is, it seems like everybody knew that Valerie Plame was a CIA operative. I mean, we've got a writer for the Times saying that he knew. Judith Miller knew, although she didn't run with that story. And then eventually, this guy out of the blue, this conservative columnist Robert Novak, goes with the story and outs Valerie Plame. Why did it take so many journalists not running this story to get one that would? I mean,
Well, apparently, I mean, you're talking about Matthew Cooper of Time Magazine,
right,
and Judith Miller, and I think they were looking for other sources. Judith Miller may have been planning to write something, apparently with the spin that the trip by Joseph Wilson to Africa was somehow tainted, because ostensibly, as Robert Novak dutifully wrote when he revealed her name, and he put it in this context, that she had kind of exercised favoritism or nepotism, and therefore it implicitly, at least, would have invalidated the usefulness and authenticity of Wilson's trip and his findings. So I don't think that much time passed before journalists who had learned the name started to publicize who it was, and Robert Novak, having, as a right-wing apparatchik columnist, he beat them to the punch.
Right. Now, you talk about Judith Miller, and, all of these issues are kind of speaking to the idea that, who is the press, allied with? Is it with power, or is it with people who need to know information? Is it with the information and the credibility of that information? Now, Judith Miller was embedded in the sense that she had security clearance when she was working in Iraq. Now, what does it mean for a journalist to have Pentagon security clearance?
Well, that's a very good point. A couple of weeks ago, when she had her piece in the New York Times after she left jail, she did say she had a security clearance, and there was a lot of head-scratching after that, because she not only wrote that she had this security clearance from the Pentagon, having gone to Iraq right after the invasion, but also said that she was not able to discuss some of the information she learned during her research as a reporter. She wasn't able to discuss some of it with her editors back at the New York Times because she had a security clearance, and they didn't, which then raises the question, who was she most accountable to? By her own description, she was more accountable to the top officials of the Pentagon than the top editors of the New York Times, even while she's drawing her paycheck from the New York Times. And, this is really emblematic of what happens sometimes subtly, not subtly sometimes. In my new book, War Made Easy, which, by the way, is published in Canada as well as the United States, I give, for example, the instance where Eason Jordan, a top executive of the news division of CNN, later revealed after the invasion that before the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, he had actually gone to the Pentagon with a list of names, literally went to the Pentagon and handed over a list of names. He said, these were people that we were thinking of hiring. we asked the Pentagon if it was our right to hire these people to do on-air analysis of the invasion, and they all gave a thumbs up, and he said that was very important to us. So here we have CNN handing over the hiring of on-air personnel to cover a war, handing that over to the Pentagon, and then being quite proud of it and saying that was an important process for CNN. That tells us a lot about the mentality that operates under these media roofs, and what the results are of a very sympathetic, supportive, lack of independent reporting on the part of these media outlets when it comes to war.
Now, that is exactly what we're talking about, I guess, right? We're talking about war, but so much of the information that we've been talking about has come out of an investigation of, you know, the outing of a CIA agent, essentially investigating sources and leaks. What does it mean that, you know, this information has come out after an investigation that isn't really investigating why we went to war, how we went to war? You know, why wasn't this investigation done officially and formally?
Well, you have the U.S. government, the executive and legislative branches, and per se, probably you could say the judiciary as well. In the hands of those who believe in the prerogative of the president to go to war, and without the constitutional requirement being played out that Congress be the entity that decides on going to war, that Congress declares war. There hasn't been a formal declaration of war since World War II, and underneath that is the politics where increasingly you have the U.S. government dominated by those who make up the rules as they go along, feel that if they can get away with it, it's correct and justified and legal, and are able to make that stick. And since 9/11, we have a very militaristic, more than ever militaristic, government in place in Washington. And sad to say that there has not been enough challenge from the Canadian government on the implications of that. You know, we share a continent. The militarism of the United States affects the world in many ways, and yet the White House has a lot of different mechanisms to try to blunt and mute criticism because the United States is so powerful diplomatically, economically, and militarily.
Well, I guess I just wanted to kind of finish up by talking about what can we expect out of our media. I mean, essentially, what is the role of media in our democracy? And, you know, what kind of reforms do we need to be looking at in order to have a media apparatus in this country that does ally with democracy and I guess not totalitarianism or some other kind of interest?
Well, the role of news media should be independent, assertive, rely on a multiplicity of sources, continuing to dig, exercising real independence, not aligning with the power centers of the government, of economics, and yet we so rarely in the United States, and this is true in many parts of the world, whatever the system, we so rarely get strong independent media outlets with a wide reach, and usually it's the smaller ones that are ready, willing, and able to exercise this independence. But it really is about democracy. I compare this to the circulatory system of the body politic. That's what media are or should be, the circulatory system. And when you have blockage, it is big trouble for the body politic in terms of democracy.
My guest is Norman Solomon. His new book, War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. Norman, I really appreciate you talking with us.
Hey, thank you, Seth.
All right, take it easy.
You too.